Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of the Gita series, offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. I invite you all to resume and join me in this pilgrimage, which we take week after week. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and as always, I have the pleasure of coming to you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam. We are going through the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as of now. We have, fairly somewhere around the midway mark. We completed three verses last week, verse number 20, 21, and 22. As always, probably we'll begin with a short summary of what we covered then. In fact, what we covered, the verses we covered last time and the verses we're going to be covering today are come under the same theme or topic as such. So in that sense, we'll be continuing that. The verse number 20, Krishna concludes his example of the jnanis who continue to act with the example of Janaka, saying that there are people like him who have attained ultimate through Karma Yoga and have continued to perform their duties even after they have attained enlightenment. In the same way, in the same verse, in the second line of that same verse, Krishna says, keeping in mind the welfare of the world, you must continue to act. Just like how these great kings like Janaka continued to act, even after there was nothing for them to attain from the world, they continued to act for the benefit of the world. In verse number 21, Krishna explains how whatever a wise person does becomes a precedent for everybody to follow, right? And we will speak about this way of acting, where one sets an example to others and continues to act so that the others can follow that example that is being set. So in this verse number 27, Krishna explains how a jnani, even though he does not have anything to gain through his actions, he does not have any desire even to get name, fame or anything like that, he continues to act because that is the example people will follow. From verse number 22, in fact, verses 22, 23 and 24, Krishna is going to give himself as an example. He gave the example of Janaka, and as we saw last time, even though Janaka is quite a popular character and must have been more popular in the Dwapara Yuga, I'm sure, even then, he's a character of a bygone age. Thousands of years ago, someone has lived. So Krishna is giving an example to Arjuna of himself. He says, look at me, I do not have anything to gain. I'm a person who has nothing to receive from this and nothing to gain from this war. And yet again, he's there right in the forefront of the battle. He's there in front of Arjuna as the charioteer. Probably he's at the firing, at the range more than Arjuna himself. He's endangering himself. So Krishna is saying, why would I do this when I do not have anything to gain from this war, anything to gain from this world? In fact, he says, Trilokeshu. In the three worlds, I do not have anything to gain. I do not have anything that is left unaccomplished that I need to accomplish with my actions. He says, still I continue to act. So that was verse number 22. And as I said, it's going to be a continuation of that. The next two verses, Krishna is going to further give himself as an example and speak further about it. So as well, we'll proceed with the verses. Verses number 23 is what we'll start with. We'll listen to it in Brother Shyam's voice. I'll give you a brief summary of the meaning of that verse, and then we will discuss in detail about what Krishna is explaining in this part of the Bhagavad Gita.
Yadi yahanna varteyam jatu karmanya tandritaha mama vartmanu vartante manushya partha sarvashah.
For were I not to act without ceasing, O Partha, people would be glad to do likewise. That's the meaning of verse number 23. So Krishna made it very, very clear that he has nothing to gain from the world, but still he continues to act. And in this verse, he explains why he continues to act. Of course, it is a reiteration, as I said, of what he had explained earlier in general. Now he is explaining it with himself as an example. He says, Yadi hi aham na varteyam. Because if I do not engage jatu forever or unceasingly, karmani atandritaha, in action enthusiastically. Atandritaha means enthusiastically, or more precisely it means without showing any weariness. Mama vartma, my path, anuvartante manushyaha, the people will follow sarvashaha in every way. So he says there will always be people who will follow blindly, because this is a very universal idea if you look at it. We see a person who is very successful, and let us say that we are trying to reach success in the same field. Let's say I'm an investor. I will look at a successful investor. If I want to become a successful cricketer, a cricketer who is already successful becomes my hero. I want to become a singer, an accomplished singer. Someone who has already achieved that becomes a role model for you. That would happen so often in our hostel, especially if you're looking at someone who's probably a singer or who is very close to Swami. You will look at that person and you will try to emulate whatever that person is doing, thinking that probably that will take you closer to Swami, or that will give you the chances that that person has got. So this is a very universal nature where you tend to follow all that a person does when you look at that person, when you start adoring that person, when you start looking up to that person as a hero. And that's why they say imitation is the best form of flattery, or you could even say the best form of adoration, right? So that is the idea even that is there behind hero worship. When we look up to a person as a hero, we strive to become all that the person is. So Krishna is saying, even though I have no reason to act, I have nothing to become, I have nothing to attain, I have nothing to prove, but I still act, because the moment I stop acting, all these people will also give up their actions. So I act, and I not merely act, but I act with enthusiasm and energy. We'll come to that a little later. So he says, I continue to perform my action, and I continue to act as enthusiastically as one is supposed to act. And this was the shloka I made a reference to when we were discussing about the shlokas that generally get misinterpreted, right? There Krishna describes a jnani as a person who is so self-contained that he has no duties to perform. There Krishna did not say that such a person who has no duty also continues to act, but speaking about himself, and he's giving himself as an example of a jnani like that, he says, I still act. So which is a clue to us that even there Krishna is saying that a jnani acts, even though he does not categorically say so. Because that he said in the previous verse that that he continues to act, but here in this particular verse, Krishna gives the reason why he continues to act. He says, if he doesn't act, people will only be happy to follow cue and not act themselves. It'll make no difference to Krishna acting and not acting, but those who are unwise, who will see him and not act, for them it might be a wrong thing, because they will be skipping their duty. So there are two important points that are conveyed here in this particular shloka, and in fact even the previous one. One is, even when a person reaches the state of complete selflessness or detachment, the person must continue with karma. That is one very clear idea. And the other one is, almost every action an avatar performs is to set an example. And I'm clearly saying almost every action, because it's for a particular reason. We'll come to that. But these are two things which come out very clearly from this verse and the verse that we covered before this last week. There's something more that we need to talk about this verse, but probably we'll go to the next verse also. We will discuss the meaning of that verse, because these two verses are closely related, because Krishna is explaining that he is doing whatever he does for a purpose, and that purpose is to set an example, and that idea continues even in the next verse. So we will listen to the next verse in Brother Shyam's voice. I'll give you a short meaning of that, and then we will discuss both of these verses together.
Utsideyurime loka na kuryam karma chedaham sankarasya cha kartasyam upahanyami mah prajah.
These worlds would perish if I were not to perform action, and I would be a cause of confusion, and I would destroy these people. So that's verse number 24. When people don't have heroes to look up to, or rather if the heroes they look up to give them the wrong message, it will only lead to chaos, right? And that's something that we repeatedly see in our society, especially when we don't look up to the right heroes, or we look up to the right heroes and we misread the signs that they give us or the examples that they set for us. And this is one thing that Swami would repeatedly tell us, especially while he's speaking to students, when he's speaking to youth in general. Swami would say that I want people who can live exemplary lives. Not only good lives, exemplary lives, because Swami would say, I want to hold you as examples to others. Adarshavantalu kavali, Swami would say, I want people whom I can hold up as examples for others. And examples of not such people who are merely good, but those that do good even when there is nothing to gain from it. In this verse, Krishna says, Chetaham, if I, karma na kuryam, don't perform actions, ime loka, the worlds, utsideyuhu, will be ruined. Cha and sankarasya, of the confusion, upahanya, of the destruction, imaha prajaha, of all these people, syam karta, I would be the cause. So he says that if I do not perform, this entire world will be ruined, and I would be the cause for the confusion that is set forth. So Krishna has nothing to gain from any of this, but his actions will always be a precedent for others to follow, and so he says, I must act. This particular shloka is, if you look at it keenly, is also a hint at Krishna's divinity itself. He says that if I don't act, the whole world is going to be ruined. We'll talk about that example-setting aspect of what Krishna is saying here in a short while, because that is the context, right? Because even when he spoke about the jnani, he said the same thing. Now he's giving himself as an example. So that is the context, and that definitely should be the main focus of our discussion. But then if you really look at the time and context of what Krishna is speaking about the Dwapara Yuga, when, you know, he is there. He's a very popular figure in the Bharatavarsha or in the subcontinent. All the kingdoms knew about him. And even among the people who all knew about him, not everybody was favorably disposed towards him. Not everybody looked up to him as a hero, right? And we are talking about only the Indian subcontinent knowing him. So Krishna is saying that if I don't act, I will be setting a wrong example. But you cannot, it would be a stretch of our imagination to say that by that the ruin of the world will be caused. Because first of all, he is popular only in the Indian subcontinent. And in the Indian subcontinent, there are probably much fewer who are looking up to him as an example. And probably even in those people who are looking up to him as an example, only few will be foolish enough to follow without thinking whatever he is doing. So what Krishna is saying here may be a slight exaggeration, that if he does not act, seeing his example, everyone would become idle, and so the world itself would be ruined. There's one portion in the Gita Vahini where Swami speaks of something that is not directly mentioned in the Gita. And it's very interesting that Swami puts in this particular paragraph, which does not have an equivalent shloka in the Bhagavad Gita, because I think it is addressing this particular hint that Krishna is trying to drop, which is actually between the lines. Probably I'll just read out that portion from Swami first, and then I will explain what Swami is telling there. Swami says, and I quote, Arjuna, pay attention to just one fact. How warm is your body now? It may be about 98 degrees. How did that happen? Because the sun bears many million times this heat at that distance, isn't it? Now, if the sun feels that it will not put up with all that fire and becomes cool, what will happen to humanity? Again, if I desist from action, imagine what will be the fate of this vast universe of activity. That is why I am engaged in action. Remember that. Not that I derive any profit thereby or get any good or any fruit. End of quote. A couple of lines before this message in Gita Vahini, Swami also speaks about the elements like fire and water and how they play their parts. And just as how the world would perish when the sun, moon, water, air, fire, all of these stop functioning, Krishna is saying the world will perish if I do not act. I mean, just to think of that, imagine fire chooses that one fine day that I am going to stop being hot. You know, you put the kettle on the stove or you put your cooker on the stove and you light it up. There is the fire, but it is not heating up the food. Imagine if that were to happen, the elements decide to not do what is their nature. And here Krishna is giving a direct analogy between these elements performing their action and he performing action. So a clear indication that he is referring to himself as the supreme nature, as the inner motivator of all of these things. But that's a different point altogether, but Krishna is just dropping that hint, and I thought this small paragraph where Swami speaks of this, because Swami also says that here, he's saying just like how the sun does not desist from doing its nature duty, and if it does, the world will be ruined. If I cease to act, the world will be ruined. So not only is it a reference to the example setting aspect which we will talk about, but it is also about that Krishna being the supreme motivator within all of these creation and within all of these natural forces too, that he is dropping a hint at, but he is not dwelling too much into that. So we'll go back to the aspect which is the context of this particular shloka. In the beginning, Arjuna also was choosing that action, that he would not participate in the war, based on a logic which was very, very similar to this, because he said that, you know, if I do this, the kings to come will follow my example and they will think that it is all right to fight for the army, fight for the kingdom, even if it were to kill your kith and kin, right? He was giving the same argument. Of course, he was a little confused then. The difference here is when Krishna is saying that I am doing all of this because I will be setting a bad example. If you look at it, actually Krishna's idea, the Krishna's motive is even more purer than what Arjuna spoke about in the beginning, though they are similar to a certain extent. Because Krishna does not even have the idea, or does not even have, not the idea, that there is no intention or feeling that if I set a bad example, people will come and speak ill of me. Right? If you look at what Arjuna said, there was a tone of that. That people will mock at me, people will look at me and say that, oh, I'm such a bad person. But when Krishna says that I have to set a good example, there is no selfishness that if I don't set a good example, people will speak ill of me. Or when I set a good example, people will worship me. It's actually quite difficult even to explain, because we are talking of a selflessness which is of a far superior category, and we are trying to look at it from our limited understanding. So when Krishna says that I have nothing to gain from all of this, he's got nothing to gain truly in that sense. And out of that kind of selflessness, the actions are coming, right? So he's saying that though Krishna is saying I will be the cause of confusion if I don't act, honestly speaking, Krishna is not even bothered about the infamy that would come if he sets a bad example. In the beginning, I had said that almost all actions of the avatar can be followed. And I said, I'll explain why I said almost and not all actions, right? This is a very, very important thing, because a lot of us look at whatever Swami has done and we say that Swami has said life, my life is my message. And so whatever Swami has done is something that I need to emulate. And we know a lot of people who get confused in that matter. But truly speaking, if we observe the lives of the avatars of Rama, Krishna, or even Swami for that matter, we would find that there are a lot of controversial actions, a lot of actions that they've performed, which we cannot come to terms with. We cannot wrap our minds around. And once, in fact, Swami was talking about these actions and Swami was telling, why do avatars perform such actions? There are two broad reasons you could give for them. And Swami has spoken about this himself. Swami would say that, you know, when an avatar performs an action which is not directly understandable or reachable through reason, Swami said, then people will think more about it. People will tend to study that action more, and through that process, one, they will think more about the Lord. The second is, they will get a better understanding of, they will get a better understanding of the nature of the Lord, and thereby one's own nature. That was one aspect. And the other aspect that Swami was telling is that when inspired by love for a devotee, the Lord will transcend any kind of boundary or any kind of lines of morality that have to be maintained in society, right? So these are two things Swami says that might inspire the actions of the Lord, and that is why when you look at the Lord's actions, they have to be studied before they are followed. You cannot take them as they are. In fact, there is the very beautiful part in the Bhagavatam where Sukha Maharshi is explaining about one of the most controversial actions that Krishna performs, the action that he performed in the time of the Rasa Leela. And that time, there's a very, very beautiful part. Probably sometime when we get an opportunity, we should dwell more only on that portion, because it's very, very useful for us to look at Swami's life in that light of that discussion. There, Sukha Maharshi gives a very beautiful example. He says, see, you have your digestive power inside your body. We call it the Jataragni, which means it's a form of fire. And then you have fire itself in its absolute form, which is a burning flame. When a fire is there in its absolute form, it can consume anything. It can consume rotten food. It can burn a rotting tree. It can burn a fresh green tree. But the same fire, when it is in the human form, in this small form of the Jataragni, you have to choose the right kind of food to put into it, right? Same is the case with the avatar. An avatar is also, you know, we are also in a sense an avatar, if you have to look at it that way, because the Jivatma is one and the same with the Paramatma. But when the Lord comes down in a human form in his absoluteness, the difference is like fire and the Jataragni within. We cannot look at the Lord's action and say that he has done all of these actions so I can do it. And Sukha Maharshi says that if you tend to do that, if you incline to do something like that, it'll only lead you to ruin. So he says every action of the avatar has to be deeply studied before one, you know, follows it. In fact, we're talking about the Mahabharata, where there's going to be a portion where at one point Arjuna is still not, after all the Bhagavad Gita and after all the learning, he's still not gotten over this idea that he has to fight against these elders that he so much reveres. So it comes to a point where Bhishma is on a rampage. He's killing hundreds of thousands of the warriors from the Pandava side, and Arjuna is still not able to get himself to fight against Bhishma with his full might. And Krishna senses this, and at one point Krishna pretends to get really vexed. He jumps out of the chariot and he tells Arjuna that I know that you are not going to, you know, fight against Bhishma with your full might, so let me myself finish him off. And he picks up one of the wheels of a broken chariot which is there, takes it in his hand like the Sudarshan Chakra, and rushes towards Bhishma. At that point, Arjuna jumps out of the chariot and holds Krishna's feet, and he says, Krishna, don't do this, because if you do this, generations to come will say that, oh, Krishna broke his own word, right? So at that point, if you look at what Krishna was doing, Krishna was not worried about setting a bad example. Krishna was not worried about him getting a bad name. In fact, many, many times, if you look at Swami's actions, there are many, many things which Swami does which probably we cannot give explanations to, we cannot understand to. I'm sure each one of us will have a list. Why did Swami do this? And why did Swami speak to that person? And why did Swami behave in this manner? Why are these controversies there? There are many, many things that we probably cannot give answers to. Because from Swami's point of view, when he is doing something, with absolute selflessness for a devotee or for any of the other reasons that we spoke about. He does not care about infamy, and Swami has said this many, many times. When I'm doing something for a devotee, I do not care if people misunderstand me. I do not care if infamy comes. And that is the nature of Swami's love and selflessness. So when an avatar acts from such selflessness, it is like that fire in its full nature. It can gobble up anything. He can do anything and it is right. There is no way it can be wrong. But having said that, in spite of that, you would also find, on the other hand, Swami would follow certain disciplines so scrupulously that it would again confuse you. You know, why would Swami have to do this? Isn't Swami beyond these disciplines? Is Swami beyond these narrow ideas that he follows? But at such times, Swami would say, no, if I dilute it in my actions, the people who are observing me will dilute it even further. So Swami would say, no, I have to set an example. And that's where Swami says, my life is my message, right? And some of these things that we will never be able to understand, we will say, why Swami is doing this? Why Swami is being so strict with himself? Why can't Swami, you know, probably enjoy a little more luxuries? Or why can't Swami be, you know, there are some things where Swami is very, very particular about gender segregation. It is understandable that Swami wanted us as students to follow it. But why was Swami himself following it so scrupulously? It's because Swami was setting an example for all of us. So in that sense, when I said that almost all actions of the avatar can be understood, it's both of these things which Krishna is speaking about. One is, he is always setting an example for others. And the other is that whatever Krishna does or whatever Swami is doing for us is born out of absolute selflessness. And that selflessness actually qualifies all actions as good. No action that is born out of such pure love and pure selflessness can be bad. But seeing that, we might end up doing something which is absolutely unacceptable, right? Similarly, all actions of Krishna or all actions of Swami are justifiable, as I said, because they're coming out of that selflessness. So if Krishna had decided that I'm not going to act, I'm not going to participate in this war, it would have definitely been the right thing to do. But when we do not understand what gives Krishna that right, or what gave Swami the right to do whatever he did, we may see him or see those actions as they are, or inaction as it was, and we will end up following it. And in the process, we would be harming ourselves, right? But to reach that state where Krishna was, where whatever he did was right, we will have to perform actions the way he performed. We will have to perform actions the way Swami performed. And how is that? Krishna says, Loka Kalyanam. Krishna had said, Utsi Deyuhu Ime Loka. This world will be ruined. Na Kuryam Karma Chetaham. If I do not perform actions. So he says, the world will be ruined if I do not perform actions. Which means the corollary of that is, when I perform actions, I am thinking about Loka Kalyanam, or the benefit the world will have, right? And this is something that Swami would also very repeatedly say, that whatever I do it only for Loka Kalyanam. Swami would say, you know, when he's spending so much time with a student, Swami would say that, why do you think I'm spending so much time with you? Is it because that you're all great devotees? Is it because I'm very fond of you, or you have something to give me and I have something to gain from you? Swami would say, no. Every moment I'm spending with you, this was something which Swami had told the students, I am doing it with the Loka Kalyanam in my mind, right? So whatever Swami does, he does it for Loka Kalyanam. And that is one hint that is being given to us of how we can tend towards that nature that Krishna represented. Because when Krishna is giving himself as an example, which means whatever we are striving to reach, Krishna is the perfection of that striving. Krishna is that perfection of that state which we will reach at the end of that striving. So the hint that he is giving here is, can you perform whatever you perform for Loka Kalyanam? Now, what is regular karma? Let's go back to the basics. One point that we've mentioned many, many times till now. Normal karma is always propelled by raga and dvesha. What I like, what I dislike. How do we define what is raga and what is dvesha? We have an idea of the self, which is first me, my body, and probably the people who are closest to me, my dearest family or my parents, my spouse and all of those people. Then there is the self, which is a little larger than these people who are directly related to me. Probably my neighborhood, probably my colleagues, the company where I work in and things like that. And then there is a circle which is larger, which could probably include my city, my country, or so on. Now imagine this to be three concentric circles. The one which is closest to me is me, my body, and my dear ones. Then there's a larger circle which, as I said, is the people who are around you. And then there is the circle which encompasses probably the entire nation or the entire world. The more selfish a person is, the actions that he performs will be concentrated in the innermost circle. And even as one becomes more and more mature and selfless, along with doing actions that are directly beneficial only to the people in the inner circle, the person will also start doing actions which are beneficial to the people in the circle around. So a person who acts in this manner is actually not necessarily spiritual or noble. It is only a cultured person, right? If you're moving in the society, there's somebody who is sitting down and, you know, somebody who trips and falls, you come and help them. Or you're sitting, you see an elderly person coming in, you give that elderly person your seat in the train or in the bus. These are seen as signs of being a cultured person, where you think of the benefit of the people around you who are not directly related to you, right? But if someone is truly able to dedicate one's life for a larger good of, let's say, the nation or the society or the environment of the whole world or whatever it is, we will look upon that person as being selfless and noble, right? So there is a selfish nature, then there is a little more refined culture, a person who is a cultured person, an educated person. Some would say an educated person should be like this, who is concerned about the welfare of people around him. And then comes a person who is noble and selfless, who is able to constantly think of loka kalyanam, right? But when I say myself, when I define this idea of myself, it is all of these circles put together. I may or may not do actions sacrificing the benefits of my family and for the nation, but my nation being good is also part of me being good. For example, even as I'm speaking here, there's a World Cup match going on where India is playing, right? And I'm not going to benefit in any way by India winning or not winning. But still there is the desire, oh, India should win, and this is my nation, and, you know, it would be nice if my nation wins and my nation lifts the World Cup. Because in some way, we define this idea of the self with all of these. And then we start deciding what action that we must do, right? And as I progress spiritually, I will relate myself or this idea of myself with more and more people around me. I will look at an expansive idea of the self, right? And that is what Swami would say, that as you grow spiritually, you should develop that vishala bhavam, or the feeling of expansiveness. Swami would say, from vyashti tattvam, from the individual idea, you should go to samashti tattvam, where you look at the whole society and see all of them as part of yourself, and you can be happy only when there is benefit for all of them. And Swami says, from that vyashti to samashti, samashti to, Swami says, srishti, where you look at all of nature, and then you can slowly head towards that parameshti, or your identification with the supreme. So now going back to the idea of raga and dvesha. Raga is defined as what I feel is going to benefit this idea of myself, and dvesha is what I think is disagreeable to this idea of myself. In other words, the whole idea of raga and dvesha is actually based on selfishness. And selfishness is based on this idea of the self, right? So even when I'm doing something for the larger good, even when I'm doing something for the nation, for the society at large, my actions are still going to be driven by raga and dvesha, right? But the narrow self concept is going to gradually reduce, and it's going to become a very expansive idea. So now look at Krishna's nature as he describes it himself. He says, I act for the welfare of the world, which means all his karma is based on the idea of the self, which is expansive, so expansive that it includes the entire society or the entire world around. So let us say we develop this attitude of looking at the whole society or nation or in the world for that matter as part of ourselves, then I'm actually likely to become more and more selfless, isn't it? And this is a nature or an approach to life, which Swami would say that we all have to develop. So when we develop this attitude, even when performing our simple duties, there will be selflessness. So when Swami inspires us to do seva, he says, go out and, you know, serve the society, serve the people in the society, it is actually this bhavam or the feeling that we are inculcating into us. Swami would often say that you don't go and serve people as though you are at a higher state and you are, you know, you're being a benefactor to a person who is at a lower state. Swami says you go out and do seva with the feeling that here is somebody whose pain I cannot bear to see. It hurts me to see that person in pain, and so I'm going and serving that person. It is nothing but you expanding the idea of yourself from saying that I will be hurt only if me and my dear family is hurt, to the idea that even if a person on the street is being hurt, I'm going to feel hurt. You are actually expanding this idea of the self. So this concept of going out and doing seva is nothing but bringing in that Vishala Bhavam, and that is something, it's a change in the way we think. So that will not go away. So Swami says you go out and do seva, and that will reflect even in the actions that you perform as your duty, right? So one, expand the idea of the self, saying that I cannot be happy if those around are not happy, and then bring in small acts of selflessness, right? And this is something that Swami would often tell us to do. This can be inculcated in every small act that we do. Let's say when we meet someone, when we make friends, when we spend time with someone, can we try to think less about how will I benefit from this person, or how will I benefit from this meeting, or how will I benefit from this discussion that I'm having with this person, and thinking that maybe this is useful to that person, right? Because if you look at it, how often we get into this thinking, do I need to spend time on this person, or do I need to spend time giving attention to this person? What will I benefit from this, right? Can we distance ourselves from that idea by thinking that, you know, maybe I will do what is the right thing? And this can be seen as simple acts of kindness that we always talk about. The reason I'm reiterating this so much is we can see how the idea of goodness leads us on in the spiritual path. In the earlier verses where Krishna spoke about the concept of yajna, we could see how having gratitude and being sincere and diligent in duty is so important. And here we can see the importance of the general idea of selflessness, the simple good nature of being pleasant even to a person who probably cannot give anything to us in return, and the ability to relate to others' pain. All of this idea of expansiveness, all of this contribute to a spiritual path. If we honestly review ourselves, we will see that, you know, most of these traits are in us. It's not that these are traits that we need to import from outside. We all have this, and as devotees, in our attempt to please Swami, what we are doing is all of these small traits will become the regular norm in our life. We will start making this our nature. And the reason why I feel that this is very, very important to reiterate in this particular portion where Krishna is speaking about himself and giving himself as an example, and he says, I do whatever I do for Loka Kalyanam. There is nothing for me to benefit. Still, I will do it, and I will do it with enthusiasm. We'll come to that point. It's a very, very important point that he makes. He says that I do it because it is going to benefit someone else, right? So this basic idea of goodness is the foundation for a spiritual path. And many times, you know, in the pursuit of the spiritual and the pursuit of the ultimate, we overlook the importance of these small acts of goodness or this simple good nature. Yes, Vedanta is very, very important. Yes, we should all have spiritual goals. We have to think about moksha. Yes, we have to believe that we are not this body. And all of that is absolutely right. We all have to strive to have all of that. Namasmarana, sadhana, all of that. But the foundation is always this basic goodness. That can I be kind to a person who will not benefit me in any way. Can I be ready? Am I ready to spend time for a person who will benefit from my time, but there is no way I'm going to benefit from it, but still I will do it, right? So that is the important thing I feel Krishna is mentioning in these two verses. Before we move to the next shloka, probably we'll summarize these three verses again, where Krishna is giving himself as an example. In verse number 22, he said, "There is nothing for me to achieve or attain, still I act." Why does he act? He explains that in the next verse. He says, because if I don't act, people will take that as an example and they will also not act. And when that happens, there will be chaos in society. So that is what Krishna said in these three verses. Before we go to the next verse, which is verse number 25, let me make a quick point before we get there. We'd spoken about this briefly last week too. You know, we can say this with I want to make this point specifically in regard with the Sai organization or say the Sai center that we go to. In our journey towards Swami, the organization or the setup of the organization, which includes the Samiti, the Sai center, the Balvikas classes, the SSC classes, or for the matter, even the ashram and the organization as a whole, all of these, with all their disciplines and regulations and restrictions, is something like, when we used to learn to ride a bicycle, we would have these balancing wheels, which are basically two wheels which are attached, which makes a bicycle a four-wheeler in a sense, right? The idea is till you learn balancing, these two wheels will help you. So all of these things that Swami has set up, the organization and all that goes with that, is like the balancing wheels. Now, if you look at these balancing wheels, it's a very, very interesting concept. The very purpose of that balancing wheel is so that one day you will not need them, right? If you're going to ride a bicycle constantly with those balancing wheels, there's no point in that. The balancing wheels are there. The very purpose of their existence is that they should become redundant one day, right? Similarly, we should not need a place, we should not need a system, we should not need an ashram, we should not need an organization to connect with Swami, because he is the indweller. So we have been given this entire infrastructure so that one day all of this will become redundant in our relationship with Swami. Right? This is a very, very important point that we have to keep in mind. Definitely we should come to a state where we don't need any of these props to help us connect to Swami. We should not need an organization. We should not need a Sai center. We should not need anything external to be able to connect to Swami. The very purpose of all of this is so that one day they will become redundant, just like the balancing wheels that we use when we ride a bicycle, right? But even as our dependence on this setup wanes, which will happen and which is supposed to happen as we progress spiritually, we must continue to foster them, because they will be helpful for the next generation of devotees who will come into this setup. Right? I might have overgrown the disciplines that this place holds. I might have outgrown the need of this entire setup, the regulations which are there, the disciplines which have been put there by Swami. And that should happen, right? We should not be stuck in that. But even as we outgrow these props, we should ensure to keep them intact so that the next generation that comes will be able to use it. So I might not need the disciplines which are there in the Sai center, but I should still continue to foster it, because there is going to be another set of people who will come, and for them this discipline will be useful, right? And that's what Krishna is saying, that I don't have to act. I don't need to do my actions at all. But if I don't act, there will be another set of people for whom action is important, for whom doing their duty is important, but they will look at me and say that, oh, here is the Lord who does not act, so I will also not act. That person not acting becomes a sin. Similarly, we should and will come to a state where we will not need the disciplines given in these setups by Swami. But still we must foster it, because seeing us, there will be somebody who will look at it and say that, oh, probably I don't need this for a spiritual journey, right? And I think this is a very, very important point. In fact, that's the point that Krishna is going to make in the next verse. I just gave it as a precursor to that. We will listen to that verse and we'll talk about this a little more because this is a very, very important point practically for all of us too. So we'll listen to verse number 25 and then we'll discuss about it.
Sakta karmanya vidvamso yatha kurvanti bharata kuryat vidvams tatha sakta chikirshur loka sangraham.
As the ignorant act because of their attachment to action, so should the wise act, but without such attachment, fixing their eyes, O Arjuna, only on the welfare of the world. That's verse number 25. What I was telling you just before I began playing that verse for you, we may have outgrown certain disciplines. And one of the classic examples that I can give is like the gender segregation that is so very dear to Swami, which we follow in all the Sai centers, which we follow in the ashram, or singing bhajans aloud. We might have reached the state where we don't need bhajan singing. We don't need to wear whites. We don't need to follow these physical disciplines which Swami speaks of. We might have reached a state of an avaduta where we don't need all of these things. But if a person who has become spiritually mature discards these or does not follow these things, the youngsters will come, will say that, you know, I want to be spiritual, but see this person, he's beyond these systems, he's beyond all of these. So, you know, he's my idol and he's whom I want to become, or she's whom I want to, whose state I want to reach. So people will start doing the same things without realizing that for that person it does not matter, but as a beginner in the path, you need it, right? So that is why even as we grow spiritually, even as we outgrow some of these disciplines, especially if we are in roles where people will look at us and follow what we do, it becomes very, very important to hold on to these things. So Krishna says that even when you become wise, continue to act. And interestingly, he says, just like how an unenlightened person would act, but with a slight difference. You must act without attachment and with only the welfare of others in mind. He says, Bharata, O Arjuna, avidvamso, those that are unwise, saktaha karmani, who are attached to action, yatha kurvanti, the way these people act, those who are avidvamso, who are unwise, and who are saktaha karmani, who are attached to action, just as they act, kuryat vidvan tatha, the vidvan or the learned or the wise one, he must also act the same way. Kuryat vidvan tatha, just as how a unwise person acts with attachment to action, a vidvan should act the same way, he says, but asaktaha, with detachment. The avidvan does it with saktaha karmani, or attachment to action, but the vidvan must do the same action with asaktaha, or detachment. Also, chikirshuhu loka sangraha. Chikirshuhu means desiring to do, as Shankara explains it. Kartum ichchuhu means chikirshuhu, with the desire to do something. So he says, chikirshuhu loka sangraha, with the welfare of others. You should desire to do with the welfare of others in mind, for protection of others. So the vidvan or the wise one will do with the desire to bring forth or to cause the welfare of others. So the definition of what is to be done is same for all. Define your duty, discriminate what is right and wrong. But the regular or the normal person, the unwise person, will do this driven by self-benefit in mind, and that will make them attached to the consequences. Right? The wise have to do the same act, same way, defining what is duty and, you know, discriminating. Of course, discrimination becomes spontaneous in the case of a wise person. But action should be very, very similar, which means what is the duty that is prescribed has to be done, but without attachment and with a view of benefiting others. So here when Krishna says saktaha karmani, attached to action, it does not mean being attached directly to action. A regular person is attached to a certain result which he is trying to effect through the action that he is performing, right? He sees action as a means to achieve what he has placed his desire on. So in that way he is attached to the action that he is performing. The wise person knows that there is nothing for him to achieve, right? That's what Krishna has been saying, that he is complete in himself. So he is not attached to any future occurrence in that sense, and in that way he is not attached to action. There's no idea that I should earn $1 million, I should have this car, or I should become famous, you know, people should know me as a wise person. There is no such attachment in that sense. So when he does not have any attachment to a future occurrence, he automatically does not have any attachment to action too. So he does not see action as a means to anything. So such a person can see just the duty quotient in the action that has to be performed. And as Krishna has mentioned here, when he says that do actions in a manner that it will benefit others, apart from directly benefiting them, it is also the benefit that they will get by observing such a person in action. So what does Krishna mean by saying, just like one who is doing action with attachment, you do it without action? So what is the similarity that Krishna is referring to? The similarity is in enthusiasm. As I said sometime back, with that same energy and enthusiasm, Krishna says, I act with that same enthusiasm without a dip in my energy, right? So when Krishna says, just as how a person who is attached to action acts, even a wise one must act, but with detachment. So where is the similarity? The similarity is in that enthusiasm with which one has to act. Can I act with the same enthusiasm and energy when I have nothing to gain and when I have something to gain? So this is actually the practical challenge that Krishna is giving. There are some things if we do, we will directly benefit out of it. There are some things that we do, there will be no benefit out of it. And we can see that there is a difference in the way we approach these two things. Can we bring these two things to a level way of looking at it in our life? If there is nothing for me to gain from it, and if there is all stake in it, will I still act with the same enthusiasm, right? That is the challenge that Krishna is giving. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that the wise man will act with the same enthusiasm, but will not be bogged down by failure or be excited when there are apparently pleasant results to be got. And this is a trait that we all have noticed in Swami, right? That enthusiasm with which Swami would do something, it would be so infectious. Anything that Swami takes up, anything that Swami would do, there would be so much of energy in whatever Swami does. And whatever these three or four verses that Krishna says here, as I said, it is one thing is it is giving us a hint as to how we must lead our life, and the other thing is it gives us a view of how the Lord works, how Swami carried himself. The other day I happened to go to the primary school at Prashanthi Nilayam for some errand, and I was just standing there under the one of the staircases leading to the dorms. There is a old looking curio case which was there, right? Nothing spectacular about it. It was a boxy little curio case, and there were some items there which all looked a bit old and nothing fancy about it. I was just standing there and I was wondering, why was that thing there? It did not serve really any purpose in that sense, or it was not having anything really exotic. So one of the teachers who was there, who came up to me and said, this curio case, this thing has been set up by Swami. And I said, has been set up by Swami. And she went on to say how it was the time when I think one of the government bodies which inspects the schools were supposed to come, right? They had sent an intimation that they are coming for a visit, as they do to all the schools which are recognized under the central board syllabus, right? So Swami one day came to the hostel the primary school and said, you know, this body is coming, so clean all of these places. Swami gave instructions how each thing has to be done, how the garden has to be done up and all of that. And then Swami was walking past this particular place and Swami said, hey, this place is empty, right? Then it would be nice if there is a curio case here, or if there's a, you know, something here which something catches the people's attention, you know. Swami had said that, and then immediately Swami said, you know what, I will send something which can be kept here. And within a short while, you know, this curio case was there, and shortly thereafter Swami himself came with all these curio items and Swami started arranging all of these things. The Lord, who's running the universe, what does he have? What reason does he have to do something like this? There are millions of schools. All schools belong to him. This is one of the schools which he has set up, of course. And there is this body which is coming to recognize the school or inspect the school or whatever it is. He's got nothing to gain from this. But see the enthusiasm and the energy which Swami puts into every small thing that he did. That was the most fascinating thing. And you know, in the name of spirituality, we become dull and we become, laid back, thinking that, oh, there is nothing for me to achieve, so I'll become. And this is one of the things which one of the elders once told me. He said, there is always in the spiritual path the danger of mistaking tamas for sattva, right? Because the same thing happens. But if you look at Swami, it was always that pure energy and enthusiasm, right? And it is very, very difficult to understand Swami's actions from our thinking of selfishness. There are a lot of things happening in the devotee circle which we are not, there are some students who are pretending to be Swami. There are devotees who are cheating other devotees. And we see all of these people, and you know, when we look at them, there are people who have spent many, many years with Swami. Swami has given them so much attention. Many times this thought occurs to us, Swami, why did you spend so much time on these people? Why did you give these people so many times? And to be honest, all of us think of it that way. Swami's nature is, when he is giving to a person, he does not even care if that person is going to come back and harm his own name or his own institutions. When he is doing something, he is doing it 100%. It is very, very difficult for us to really comprehend that nature of Swami, and just what Krishna is saying. He's there right in the middle of the battlefield. He's there in the action, but he's just beyond all of that. And he's completely selfless, and it's unless we gravitate towards that selflessness, we will not be able to understand where this is coming from. And it's a different kind of an energy. And that's why when we've seen Swami, we've seen that enthusiasm. Just like how if I am running a school, and if somebody is going to inspect that school, I will want my school to get that recognition. I will want my school to get that name, right? So the enthusiasm with which I would do my actions, the same enthusiasm or probably a little more of that enthusiasm, Swami does it, but he has no desire at all. He does not care whether it gets a recognition. He does not care whether his school gets a good name or a bad name. And same is the case when Swami is interacting with a person. He does not care whether this person is going to benefit him. Is there in any way Swami is going to get any benefit out of that person? He's a rich person. He's an influential person. No. Constantly Swami would say, my view is always on Loka Kalyanam, right? And that is the greatest lesson that Swami has given us. And that's why these few verses which Krishna explains is a hint to us how we must carry ourselves. It is also a hint as to a small window into the nature of the avatar and the nature at we looking at our own Swami and reveling and saying that, wow, what a personality we've been blessed to know and blessed to be inspired by. So with that thought, dear listeners, I'll conclude this week's episode. I'll meet you all again next week for the continuation. The next few verses also reiterate whatever Krishna has been saying. These are very, very important verses because these are practical ways by which we can implement whatever is being said here. And if I were to summarize whatever was said here, the simplest thing that we can start doing is, can we have the same kind of love and enthusiasm when we are interacting with a person who is not going to benefit us in any way? Can we look at the pain of a person who is in no way connected to us and feel that person's pain a little? And even as we are doing whatever we are doing, can we think of the larger good? I have nothing to gain from this, but still I will do it for the good of the others? Can we have these ideas in our mind? These are simple things. And as I said, simple goodness, simple acts of goodness, being kind to a watchman, being kind to a person who is in the lowest rung of your corporate life. All of this adds to what Swami is talking of as a nature of a karma yoga, karma yogi, right? So with those thoughts, I thank you all for your very, very patient listening. I hope to see you all again, meet you all again next week. If you have any thoughts to share, feel free to write to me. Feel free to write to listener@radiosai.org. Or if you are one of those who have jumped into the WhatsApp bandwagon, you can send us your feedback through our WhatsApp number, through WhatsApp number 2, 9393258258. That's our WhatsApp number, 9393258258. You can send in your comments. If you found anything what I said disagreeable, feel free to give your critical feedback. It's always welcome. I'll meet you all again next week. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Vishu for the last segment of today, the Vahini Satsang. Till I meet you next time, take care. Jai Sairam.